This is Jason Fitzgerald, and you're listening to the Over the Cap podcast, hopefully the best podcast that you can find regarding NFL contracts, free agency, front office news, and all kinds of good stuff like that. And on this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to look at the job that general manager John Lynch has done in the last 2 years, kind of review some of his moves that he's made, where the team stands now, where they look at going forward with their salary cap, who are some players that maybe they could target, what are some tendencies that the front office is showing, and how they can maybe turn around what's been a pretty dismal couple of years as they try and move on from really the heyday of the last couple of years, which was the Harbaugh run, to what's really just been a mess for the last 4 or 5 seasons right now. But first, if you're interested in learning more about the salary cap, I'd suggest that you check out my book, Crunching Numbers. It's available at crunchingnumbersbook.com or on amazon.com. It's on sale for $19.99 if you want the softcover edition. And if you are interested in a digital download, you can get that for $9.99 to your Kindle. You can find both of those on amazon.com. If you haven't really heard about the book before, we really dive into everything collective bargaining agreement related with the NFL. We break things down into kind of easy to understand terms. You'll find the book in a lot of NFL front offices. It's a great thing if you're looking to one day work in the NFL, whether you're going to work in a front office, whether you want to be a NFL agent one day, or if you just want to impress your friends of all your knowledge related to the salary cap and NFL contracts, it's the book for you. You can even take a look on there. If you look on Amazon, you'll probably see a testimonial there from one of the 49ers executives. So we can just tie that in a little bit there. Yes, so we were able to get Parag Marate to actually give just a little shout out for the book. And, you know, it's pretty well received, so it makes a great Christmas gift if you're interested in getting something like that for someone or for yourself, of course. So check that out, amazon.com or crunchingnumbersbook.com. So let's start here. I think where you look at San Francisco, it's really a team that people expect a lot more from. And maybe the fact that they lost their quarterback this year has been kind of a, I don't know what the word really is for it, but I think it's hidden a lot of the flaws with the team. I think some people just kind of wrote it off. Well, they lost their quarterback, so what were they really going to do? But I don't think that things look too good for them even before that. And you lose your quarterback, obviously that's devastating. But you expect a team, I think, to do better than San Francisco did. And when you see the way that San Francisco has played, and they're arguably the worst team in the NFL, they're probably going to get the number one draft pick. But you would have expected something more after you've been talking about rebuilding this for the last 2 years. And here you stand, a 2-win team, really for the most part, headed nowhere. So, you know, everything starts with the general manager, and it was a very different hire. When they decided to go to John Lynch, when they made the decision to really turn the organization over here, it was a controversial hire, I would say, because it was a real out-of-the-box kind of move. Lynch, obviously a tremendous NFL career, was kind of settling in as a member of the media doing broadcasting. Had no front office experience, and they brought him in, and that's a tough job to jump into. Now, San Francisco does have a good foundation, I think, for the organization. Their contract guys are really good. We'll get into a lot of the contract stuff, but I think that was going to be a lot of the support system for him probably came from that area. And you can tell with certain things that are done that there is a heavy reliance on that. But still, the general manager is the person that's making the final decisions on the team. And I think you have to question a lot of the deals that were made. When you go back and you look at what San Francisco has done in free agency the last 2 years, what's gone on a little bit with their draft, I think those are all things that you look at and you start to say to yourself, wow, you know, maybe this is not what we expected out of Lynch. And how much longer can we kind of fumble through figuring things out before we're going to have to make a change again. And you go back to some of their signings, and let's pull up some of his signings since he has been here, just to get an idea as to the type of players that are being targeted. So let's take a look, and here we go. So at the top of the list, obviously you have the quarterback. Now, to me, this was one of the more surprising signings, I think, of last season. I don't like to ever say necessarily that quarterback contracts are bad. They're a necessary evil. I think that's kind of the way that you have to look at it. Things changed a couple of years ago. If you want to say it began with Joe Flacco, I think you can argue that it began with Joe Flacco, where guys were getting big contracts despite the fact that there wasn't necessarily a lot to fall back on. Others might go to Eli Manning. Eli Manning, obviously, there's a little bit more of a draft history there that maybe led to that. Others maybe will go back even further, you know, to someone like a Rob Johnson or, you know, a couple players like that. So, you know, Garoppolo had, for the most part, no real history in the NFL. Let's pull up his stats here in the little bit of brief time that he was in the NFL. And so, you know, he was drafted by the New England Patriots. He was a late second round pick, so you can get an idea for where his draft grade was there. Hadn't played much. In 2016, he went 2-0 as a starter, 502 yards, 4 touchdowns. Then last year, you know, he gets the little run in San Francisco at the end of the season where he goes 5-0, 1,500 or so yards, 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. That was where the legend was born that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't lose. You know, he was 7-0. Had a little bit of an injury history. Not much to really fall back on. So looking at what the team had done years ago, going back to the Colin Kaepernick move, Kaepernick was a far more accomplished quarterback than Garoppolo. And you can say all you want about the negatives of Colin Kaepernick. And from a football perspective, I think there's plenty of negatives. Let's throw the political stuff out. Obviously, that rubs some people the wrong way. Other people doesn't bother so much. I fall in the it doesn't really bother me category. But there were a number of things that he did, you know, going into his contract where he was playing at a relatively high level. Was he a prolific passer? No. But he had a higher grade than Garoppolo. And you could say, well, how would you say that? Well, you can just look at where they're drafted. So you can guess from that he's someone that probably had a higher grade coming out. And he had shown reasons why that was going to work for them. You know, he makes a championship game, a Super Bowl. The team was doing well. Now, the team maybe didn't do well. Once the talent started to subside, you started to see the flaws more and more with him, that he didn't have the ability to carry the team. But either way, they basically took a player who had a tremendous track record and they got him on a pretty good deal. You know, it was around $18 million or so, give or take a little bit. There were some incentives that were in there. There were a lot of per game roster bonuses. So you would have figured that given what they had here and who you would think was, you know, kind of pushing a lot on the contract side, you would think that they would have been risk averse with him, because San Francisco in general is a very risk averse organization. We'll get into a little on the way that they do their contracts and contract structures and everything else. But all in all, they're very calculated, but they're very risk averse. And with Garoppolo, I really thought, and I know I put it out there many times, the comparisons to Kaepernick to me were very valid. And I thought that that meant at the most, even with the changing market that was out there, that Garoppolo probably would have gotten an offer from San Francisco in the 21 to 23 million range with incentives that could push it higher. There just wasn't anything there to give you belief. You know, quarterbacks who haven't really played much early in their careers and, you know, have gone on to have that little run or whatever in year 3 or 4 kind of stuff and have gone on to get the big deal afterwards, this is success rate is really not tremendous. You know, in the last, 15, 20 years or so, the names that stick out to me as doing really well in that regard, and I don't even know if you would call these really well, would probably be someone like a Matt Schaub. You know, he had a couple of good years in Houston, and it was really the second contract is when things went bad for him. Chad Pennington had a couple of years with the Jets before injuries caught up with him. Maybe injuries caught up with him as soon as he had a good year, to be honest. You got Kirk Cousins would be another example. And I think there's a lot of similarities between Cousins and Garoppolo and the way that things were approached. Because if he doesn't take that deal for 21, 22, 23, the logical next step for me is the franchise tag. Because the franchise tag gives you an ability to evaluate him. Now, a lot of people have come out and said that the franchise tag was a big mistake when it came to Cousins. Yes and no. The second tag was an absolute disaster. That's a complete mistake. And you do lose leverage when you get to that second tag, and especially when we're talking about a quarterback. But the first tag makes sense because you need to see more. You need to see more before you're going to make this kind of commitment. And I think that was right by Washington. You want to see more. You might pay a little more in the long run, but you want to see more. And had they gone in there at the second franchise tag and negotiated in good faith and made a solid offer, he probably would have been a Washington Redskin. You know, he wouldn't have ended up in Minnesota. So they had the same kind of options here to go with Jimmy G and go in a different direction, but they didn't do it. They jumped all the way up to 27.5 with a 48.7 guarantee up front. 74.1 million injury guaranteed. These are big numbers. Now, they did give him a small signing bonus, so that gives you some options on trading. There's some big roster bonuses in there. The per gamer is around 4 million. The cash flow structure is a little bit more San Francisco friendly. There are some things that you'll look at in there and say, okay, you know what? It was not as bold a signing as was out there, but it also still was nowhere near the kind of cash flows that you'd see on those $22 million deals that existed in the NFL. So I think that was a real surprising one. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but I think at this point now you really have to worry about where that's going to go in the future. If I'm with that team, I don't look at this and say this is the future anymore. I look at it and say maybe it's the future, but I don't think you can count on that. I don't think you can count on it before, but they went in bold enough on the contract to where they were clearly thinking that this was going to be something that was going to be big for them in the future. And I think at this point you have to be more cautious moving forward. So if you want to grade that one a C, you can probably grade it a C. Pierre Garçon, I think you grade this one pretty much an F. 9.5 million, 17 million guaranteed. Contract structure wise, 12 million signing bonus. That gives you a lot of protection. You look at him next year, there's not a big gap between his cap number and his dead money number. A lot of times that's going to give a team pause about whether they're going to want to release a player or not. I don't know what they saw. The market at that point in time was really not there for a player like him. Again, let's take a look at his numbers here. As he went into free agency, coming out of Washington, you know, he's 31 years old. Did he have a good year the year before? Yeah, you know, he had 1,000 yards and 3 scores. That's not bad, but you go back before that, you know, 750, 777. You know, at that age, you're a $7.5-8 million player, you know, really like a 1 year guarantee. They didn't go there. And you look at this, he's been healthy for 16 games in the last 2 years. He's produced a total of 786 yards and 1 touchdown. I don't know what they saw in this. I don't know why they did it. I don't know how you go beyond an F. Weston Richburg. Richburg has not had a good season. The offensive line, I think, has done pretty well in San Francisco, but he has not. I don't think you look at this one, though, as a negative contract. See, this is where sometimes where you talk about contracts, things can get a little bit weird because sometimes you grade the process of who's the player that you target And that's different than the deal that's signed. You know, it's when I talked about the Jets last week with Spencer Long, that looks like an atrocious signing because he's just not that good on the field. But when you look at the way their contract was structured, where the money was relative to the market, it's not too bad. Richburg was the top-rated center, I believe, to hit free agency. He didn't set like a new market with his deal. So I think that was a decent job by them. 9.5 is an awful 16.5 guaranteed. That's okay. He's got $12 million vested. They'll be able to, possibly get out of some of that, I think, if they wanted to. So I think you'd grade that probably like somewhere between a C and a B. If you want to call it a C+, you can. Richard Sherman was a big hit. I don't know how much credit you give the general manager on that one. You know, there are deals sometimes that just kind of you luck yourself into. And I think this was one of them. This was a very experienced contract team going in there and taking advantage of, I think, what was a very emotional Richard Sherman. Sherman did not have representation. He represented himself, and that's perfectly fine. But I don't think there was the time and effort that would go into, you know, if you were really going into free agency, you would take a lot of time to look at things that were out there, how to market yourself, what that market really is for players. And I don't think Sherman really did that. He was very hurt. It's very clear even from his comments now. He was very hurt by the fact Seattle let him go. I think he looked at San Francisco with the quarterback in the same division and said, you know what? I'm going to get a chance to stick it to Seattle two times every year. I'm going to be here for 3 years. I think he bought into the concept of incentives, which is always a bad thing because a lot of incentives are very difficult. His were near impossible. His contract was so bad that even the union at one point had to step in and make them change the terms of a training camp roster bonus that was absolutely ludicrous, the way that they had that laid out, to where basically if he was still nursing his way back from injury in August, he wouldn't have earned it. And that's insane. So you give him an A+ for it. I don't know how much credit you give the general manager on that one. Sherman gave himself no opportunity, really. And, you know, if he's happy, he's happy. That's perfectly fine. But if we're looking at this from a front office perspective, it was just pouncing on a situation and taking advantage of it. Jerick McKinnon, just a horrific signing. $7.5 million made no sense. McKinnon is, you know, a mid-grade kind of pass receiver. And I get that the coach probably saw that and said, well, you know, that could be my Tevin Coleman, or, he's going to be my guy out of the backfield that's going to do a lot of stuff. Those kind of players typically would go $4 million, $4.5 million, someone that comes with McKinnon's background. To go to 7.5, 11.7 full, 18 total, injury protection, I mean, it's wild. Now, he didn't get a chance to prove me or anybody else wrong because he got hurt right away. For him, that wasn't one. That's not like a Sammy Watkins getting hurt and you go, well, are you surprised? You know, this is one of those where unfortunately it happens, and I don't think you can blame them for that. But it was just a terrible contract. It was one of those that was going to be very difficult to live up to no matter what. You look at what they've gotten out of Breida, who I think was a third-round pick, mid-round selection, whatever it was there. Perfectly fine. There was really no need for this deal. This is an albatross deal. It's one that they're regretting now. They'll probably regret next year. It's a deal that was flubbed. I find it very hard to believe that their front office didn't notice this. They very clearly were not looking to use a signing bonus with McKinnon. They got hit, and this is a question that I get asked all the time. That's the only reason I'm really talking about it a little more in depth here. They got hit with a very obscure rule in the CBA called the 50% down rule. What that was meant to do was to prevent a team from front-loading a contract in terms of salary cap hit, and then the second year going down to a really low number. So basically what you have to have is the first year and the second year have to be within 50% of one another. So that's why where Garoppolo has the monster cap hit in the first year, his second year is still pretty high. You know, obviously not as high as this year where I think it's, you know, $37 million or something, but it's still pretty high because it has to be half of that. when it's not, the difference is treated like a signing bonus. I could only think of one player recently where that happened, and that was in Indianapolis. He was a right tackle. I can't think of his name right now off the top of my head. That was very clearly a mistake, but that was not an experienced group, I think, of people doing it. So all I can guess is that that was Lynch somewhere up front on this one and something was missed. So, yeah, there's a lot of dead money when and if they're going to have to cut McKinnon. So I think that one is just a total F. That was one of the worst signings in the league, arguably the worst. I think Watkins was the worst last year. This one is probably number two. Let's see what's next. You have Tart, who signed for 6.5. You know, that's so-so in terms of a contract deal there. That number's probably a little bit high, but you kind of understand what they did. It's only 2 years, so that's not as big of a deal. Goodwin has not really worked out the way they hoped. They went in at 6.3 on him. I understand what they were doing there. San Francisco has always been a team that wants to jump in early on these deals. A lot of times they'll sign a guy for a year and then they'll jump back in there a couple months later and extend him. I think that's what they saw with Goodwin. I think they saw that speed. They saw that he could add a dimension to the offense. So let's just lock him in now before that number maybe hits 8, 9, 10. In light of the Garcon deal, probably would have been 12, 13 had he really had some monster seasons. That's really been nothing more than an okay signing. Brian Hoyer was an awful signing. There was just no real reason for it. They gave him a lot of money. They ended up giving him a lot of money to go away. Tomlinson, that's okay. Malcolm Smith, similar to Garcon, that's a bad deal. Kyle Juszczyk, it's a fullback. At least they do use him more than like a Red Ellison in New York, who was another one that was a very high priced, you know, kind of fullback slash H-back, whatever. Those players have very little need in today's NFL, so they don't make a lot of money. To go to 5 is kind of ridiculous on that. Cooper, I don't think ever played for them. They gave him 2 to just go away. Earl Mitchell, he's okay. You know, but to go after an older player who was cut and basically give him the same contract, $4 million, 6.5 injury protection, that seems illogical. Dumervil's, yeah, that was okay. Similar in the Mitchell one, you know, you're going probably a little too old there, but it is what it is. Kilgore, that's a bad deal. You know, they've done a couple of these, but at least before you kind of said, well, they did it with a prior general manager who was then gone. They signed Kilgore. He basically then they decide, well, we're going to target a center. So you end up trading him. So you pay him. What was his signing bonus here? Did he not have one? He may not have had one. You know, and you end up trading him away. Marsh, yeah, whatever. You know, that's okay. They had Goodwin the year before when they signed him as well on the $3 million deal. Jeremy Curley never played for them. That was, I think, that was a couple million guarantee, you know, and he was cut. So all in all, I mean, it's not a great group of guys that you've seen them sign here, you know, in that in the time frame that, you know, he's kind of been running the show. You know, you just look at some of these players. I mean, it's just not a great look, you know, for whatever they've done. So I think you look at that and you're probably a little bit worried. I look at some of those names and where those players are in their careers, and it's not as bad as, but it reminds me a little bit of what we've seen on the Raiders. And that's that you're kind of reaching for guys that are question marks or kind of really beyond their prime. You know, Garcon beyond his prime. Sherman, and I say that's a good signing. Sherman is probably beyond his prime. You know, McKinnon is a little bit of a name. You know, Malcolm Smith, I don't know if he really had a super prime, but, you know, beyond that, you know, the fullback. Some name guys like a Cooper and a Curley, that there was some name value, a Mitchell, a Dumervil. You know, that's not really necessarily how you're going to build a future. You know, Cooper, there's at least a couple things there, I guess you can point to, you know, Hoyer. And again, you know, you don't want to go on the quarterback stuff, but, you know, it's just, you're bringing in guys that aren't going to be there in the future. And I understand that you need some stopgap talent, to stock your team, but I think that's just been pretty poor. You look at the draft selections on the team, and I don't think anything really stands out there. You know, the Foster trade is a giant black eye on the organization. You pick someone with a first round pick, and in the second year of his deal, he's gone. He's gone. And you say, well, you know, they had no control over the off the field that went on with him. He's just not a good guy. Sure. But every single one of those red flags was screaming at you in the draft. There was a reason why he was where he was, and it's because of all these red flags. And he's really been an embarrassment for the organization, you know, all the different issues that he's had, and you have to go out and defend him. Finally, it gets to the point where you just can't even do it anymore, and you have to cut him. And, you know, luckily for them, you know, I believe, you know, his guarantees void out because of his suspension. So at least they didn't get hit with more money. But it was an awful move. I mean, it is just a complete waste of a pick. So you look at some other things here with them. And this is one of the reasons why I say the result that you see on the field right now, absolutely, I believe, is Lynch's doing. And when you look at the team since 2017, when he came in, about 84% of the 49ers roster was signed in 2017 or 2018. That is fifth in the NFL. That's behind the Bills, the Raiders, the Cardinals, and the Browns. That's it. So it's not like they're running with a lot of players that they were stuck with from an old regime. These are his players. So, yeah, granted, it takes time to, you know, build a team and kind of fix everything. But again, you're looking at a large number of players who have come in under his watch. And when you see a team sitting there at 2-10, I don't know how you look at that and give that a pass when this is his roster. It is. 51 players they've brought in since 2017. I mean, that's a huge number. Where are they with the, you know, homegrown players? 54%. That's pretty average in the NFL. That's okay. So they're not doing necessarily good or bad by that. Here's one of the things I think that would worry me a little bit about the type of players that they're signing. And I think this kind of gets into the 49ers contracts. So if you look at their signings here, or let's just look at their roster construction. And again, some of these players were going to be signed before him, but you know, by and large, most of the players were signed, since he's been here. So let's take a look. Let me just pull these up here. Draft round. Here we go. So here is the composition of the 49ers roster. Players that have a first or a second round draft grade, 19.7%. That is 29th in the NFL. So that tells me, one, you haven't done well in the draft. Now, that part of that is not his fault. That is people before him too. But part of that means that the players that you're targeting in free agency are not those high-ceiling players. And there's reasons why sometimes you don't want to target those players, for a number of different reasons. But there are players who do fall through the cracks that do have those first and second round grades that are effective players. They're clearly not targeting them. You look at where they are with their mid-round picks, they're at about 37%. That's 15th in the league, so that's about average by mid-round 3, 4, 5, and 6. And now you go to their undrafted and 7th-round players, they're at 42.6%. That is 7th in the NFL, behind the Jaguars, Vikings, Bills, Bucks, Chargers, and Cardinals. For some of those teams, it's about the fact for the Jaguars and Vikings, their salaries are so high up top, they have to bring in those lower level guys, to fill out the rosters, because that's all they can afford. For San Francisco, I would say this is more by choice. They've had a lot of cap space and they've spent a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. They've spent pretty decently the last 2 years, but I think it's questionable as to where that money is going. If you look at, players. Let me just pull this up here. Players that the 49ers have drafted since 2017. Very high on those low-level picks. And, middle of the pack, first and second rounders. It's okay, but that's because those are guys they drafted. When you look at players that have not been drafted by the team, signed outside of the organization, and again, this lends to the kind of players that they're targeting, 12% of their signings have a first or a second round grade. That is 26th in the NFL. The only teams worse than that are the Jets, Titans, Texans, Lions, Broncos, and Bengals. You look at their mid-round signings, and they're close to the top at 36% here. They're 7th in the NFL. You look at their undrafted number, 52%. That's about average. So I look at them as an organization that is targeting really a mid-tier kind of player and trying to build an entire roster around that. And maybe that will work out for them, but that's where they're going right now. I don't know if that's an issue contractually. That's all they can sign. I don't know if maybe that's something from ownership giving them a budget and saying, well, we need a lot of players, so we really can't go very high. Or if this is just a decision that you don't want to get too high in there. And I think this is where you kind of get into some of the issues that they might have with their contracts. So San Francisco is, in my mind, one of those standout organizations when it comes to contracts. All right, I put them up there with teams like Philadelphia, New England, Denver, who would be some of the other teams that generally I associate with good deals. Those are probably the primary teams. And sorry if I'm forgetting somebody in that group. I feel like I am, but those teams always stand out to me. San Francisco really stood out, though, in the old CBA. And what they used to do very well, probably better than most organizations, was they got in very early on contract extensions, where I talked about the Goodwins and those kind of players. They got in really early on guys, 2 years in the league, and they would extend them. They would make that move. Take a guy who's maybe been injured and extend him, because you maybe can get 2 years at $3 million rather than having him, play out a cheap year after injury and then him getting $6 million if he has a good year. So those were some of the things they did. They used to maneuver money to use up cap space in a pretty efficient manner when those were things that had to get done. The rules changed in 2011 with the new CBA. That pushed the extension time frame to 3 years. It also kind of put in a lot of dummy-proof rules when it came to things. They got rid of those big albatross contracts at the top of the draft. So teams that really kind of screwed up when it came to draft picks and the way they were structuring those deals, well, they didn't get hurt anymore. They got rid of salary cap spending minimums. So teams were able to do different things with the cap that allowed for massive amounts of carryover. So those organizations can simply you know, absorb a lot of mistakes or offer a lot more money to quote unquote stars. And that changes the dynamics of everything that goes on. And, you know, San Francisco was still very effective going into 2012, 2013. But, you know, at that point in time, a lot of teams were still figuring their way through the old CBA. And that's not the case, or the new CBA, excuse me. And that's not the case anymore. And part of me wants to say that maybe some of this has kind of passed them by. And they haven't necessarily adjusted properly with the times. And I think that there could be at least something to that with the way they're doing things. They've been very strong on their contract structures. Everyone's got per-game bonuses. Everyone's got off-season workouts, all kinds of things like that. But you have to do more, I think, to stand out, especially when you're a bad organization. And right now, would you want to go and play for San Francisco? And I don't think that's the case right now. And let's just look at their cap situation for next year, and then we'll dive into some of the issues I think that they have with their contracts and the way that they're maybe approaching things. So San Francisco next year should be in, prior to tenders and everything else, somewhere in the ballpark of $65, $66 million in cap space. That's good right now for eighth in the NFL. They're going to be right there with the Cardinals and Texans. Those could very easily flip one way or the other. They'll be probably a little bit behind the Raiders, the Browns, Bills, and then Browns, Bills, Jets, and Colts all have massive amounts of cap room. So they'll definitely be behind those teams. San Francisco will, if they get that top pick, they're looking at a rookie pool of about 10.5. So you figure they're going to lose six for that. So that brings them down to about $60 million. You know, figure you hold off $10 million for the regular season. So you're probably looking at about $50 million in salary cap space that they can spend. So that's a lot of contract money, depending on how you want to structure the deals. San Francisco does not have a lot of cuts that they can make to create extra room. Like I said, the deals that have really not worked out have not been really great in terms of a contract structure. You know, they save 1-2 at Garcon. When you factor in the cost of a replacement player, that's like saving, you know, 6,000 on the cap. Smith is similar. He creates 1.25. So, you know, there's a couple guys maybe that could go here and there, but you're just going to make up the money that you'd lose in the rookie pool, you know, a couple million, and that's it. Other teams have massive amounts of cap room that they can create. You know, San Francisco could probably push some guys forward with contract extensions. That's a possibility as well. But that's really where they are. So the question I think is, when you look at them, is can they make attractive offers? And right now, I don't think that's the case. And again, when you get into a lot of these things, I think... sorry, we just had some little bit of computer problems there. Hopefully I didn't get cut off. When you get into some of these things and you see the way certain organizations act, you kind of get some ideas. So let's just look at the 49ers roster here in terms of money spent. They have one player over $15 million. That's the quarterback. When you look at the players signed for $10 million and over, they only have one. They're tied for the lowest in the NFL. They're the only team that has no players between 10 and 15 million. And again, you go down, they're number two in the NFL. Really, they're tied for number one in the NFL. Players between 5 and 10 with 11. Players between 1.5 and 5 million. They are fifth in the NFL behind the Bills, Saints, Jets, and Patriots. So you're talking about a lot of low-level guys. And guys that are basically minimum salary players, they're also fifth. I'm sorry, they're not. They're much lower than that. They're 24th in the NFL. So they are hanging, you know, in that middle section. When you look at just the veteran players on there, you know, that's where they're at. And, you know, you look at... just a couple different things. Let's look at the way that they're structuring contracts for their veterans. So this is where you get an idea as to the way they do things. So in terms of an average contract value, they are 16th in the NFL at $5.5 million a player. That tells you where they're kind of living. But these are the issues to where you look and you say, are they really attractive? 47% of their contracts are guaranteed for injury. Fourth lowest in the NFL. Amount fully guaranteed at signing. Fourth lowest in the NFL, 32.9%. Percent paid as a signing bonus. 26th in the NFL with 14.7%. Per game bonuses. Second in the NFL, 6.3% of a contract is given as a per game bonus. That's very team friendly. They are seventh in the NFL with, I just lost them there, 1.6% of their contracts are paid out as workout bonuses. Though I like workout bonuses, but a lot of players don't because they'd rather be in Miami or something in the offseason or, you know, home, wherever they call home, than, you know, being in the city that they play in just to do workouts to collect a little bit of money. So I look at those numbers and I say to myself, is that going to be attractive when it comes to targeting free agents? And I don't think it is. And I think this is where sometimes you have to change up the way you're thinking and what you're approaching. And you put all the pieces together and you can see why they're not going after those top players and where they end up with the players they have. And a lot of it has to do with their philosophy, I think, as to how they're approaching these contracts. It doesn't pay them, it doesn't make sense for them to waste time on some of these better players because realistically, they're not going to get them unless they move off of this. And sometimes you bump up those annual values to get the things that you want. And I think that's what we've seen there. And I don't, you know, it's a team that I like the way that they've done stuff. And it works when you're successful, but when you're not successful, sometimes you do have to make changes. And then you have to find creative ways to go back to a formula that works. But sometimes you got to make changes. Right now, I think there's a little bit of Titans in them. And there's other teams like this too, but I like to always go back to the Titans because I feel like they've always been this way. The Titans are a team that typically doesn't spend much. They are generally one of the cheaper teams in the league. But what you'll see when you look at a couple of their deals, and I know they've spent more in the last year or two with a couple of the guys they brought in their secondary and everything else, but traditionally, what I've seen a lot of there is that they target what would be the best player at a second tier position, like a running back, similar to McKinnon going to there, to San Francisco, and they'll overpay that player for his talent level, but they'll pat themselves on the back because, well, you know what? It's still only $3-5 million, you know, compared to other positions where you'd have to go in and, you know, find a superstar. You know, making a ton of money if you signed them. So they kind of fall into that category where they're always finding that, you know, that guy who used to be a name, somebody who's coming off an injury, some of which work out. You know, Arakpo, for example, has had a pretty good career in Tennessee. You know, that's worked out for them. But most of their signings are more like of the Sean Green variety. Through the years. So I think there's a little bit of that in San Francisco right now, that everything is being done with this thought of, okay, well, not a great safety, but we got him for six. That's pretty good. You know, running back, well, not great, but hey, we didn't have to spend 10. Hey, we got the best center in free agency. That's still under 10. I think there might be some logic to that thought. And so that's why, as you look at free agency, and you do have a lot of these visions as to what San Francisco might do, I'm not sure if they're going to do as much as people are thinking. They haven't shown, even though they've spent, they have not shown that inclination to go out there and go after those big name players. For example, a DeMarcus Lawrence. Not that he's going to be available, but would they even be in the running? And my thought is no, they wouldn't be. You know, someone like an Ansah, Sue. No, probably not. Would they be in on an older player like a Clay Matthews? Sure. You know, Randall Cobb. Sure. You know, someone like a, well, they're not going to sign Dante Moncrief, but someone like that. You know, that kind of tier of player. Those seem to be the guys that they'd be more around. You know, would you want to go after Amaris Claiborne? You know, he's probably going to make $9 million to lock down the second corner spot, or maybe 8-5. He'll be right under Sherman. Sure. Those are the kind of players that maybe they would trade. But here is another thing that would worry me about free agency for them. So you look at those teams that are going to have that mega space. I think the Jets and the Bills, I think, will target higher priced players. A little less certain on the Bills because the Bills don't really have a track record, but I feel as if ownership is kind of going to be in a position that pushes them to make a move. So I think that's probably what will happen in Buffalo. So I think that that's okay. I'm going to be competing with those teams. The Browns might be a little bit of a worry, but the teams that I would probably be worried about are the Colts, the Cardinals, and possibly the Texans. I think the Colts are certainly a much more desirable location because of Andrew Luck. I think the coach is also going to get a lot of credit, and I think at this point, Shanahan, and I know the Colts are coming off a terrible loss. They're probably not going to make the playoffs, but I think Shanahan at this point is more like, there's not a negative on him, but I think that the bloom is off the rose, so to speak, when it comes to that. The Cardinals do have a young quarterback. It's a possibility that some people may look at that as something. They'll be more aggressive, I think, with the money they offer. And Houston, obviously, is a playoff team. They have the young quarterback. They have, you know, the group there in place. And I feel like those are the teams that are going to compete for the same type of players, because I don't know if we've really seen those teams go out there in free agency and really look to make big splashes either. They've always been kind of more calculated in what they do, similar to San Francisco. So when you look there, I think they're better destinations and they're probably going to make more solid contract offers. So I think that that could be a negative for San Francisco going into free agency. That's one of the reasons why I would not be stunned if San Francisco goes out there and maybe starts redoing a couple of their players. You know, they don't have a lot of free agents this year. The unrestricted variety, you know, Jimmy Ward, that was another bad decision by San Francisco to pick up his option. He's a player who's always hurt. No surprise he got hurt again this year. Person has been perfectly fine. You know, he's a low-level or low-priced guy. You know, maybe get a couple million. You know, they could bring him back. But these other names like an Alfred Morris, you know, there's not much there. These guys don't play much. Everyone is under 50%. You know, so there's not much there. But when you go into the following year, and let's pull up their 2020 free agents, it's a bigger group. And you look at, you know, they're going to have to make a decision on Staley. My guess is he'll retire. You know, he's older. But you've got Buckner, you have Armstead, who are both going to be extension eligible. That makes a lot of sense to maybe do those guys. You know, they're good players. Buckner's probably going to make a lot. So, you know, that might be something that it looks like they're spending a lot of money. you know, to get someone. So I would not be surprised if you see that. You have Brito, who's going to be restricted next year. So that means that he is eligible this year, I believe. Let me just double check on him. Let me make sure I have his years right. But I think he and Bourne were both 2017. Let's take a look. Yeah, 2017. So those players can get extended after this season. I wouldn't be stunned. I would not be stunned if you see them using a lot on some of those kind of players and kind of saying that they're taking care of their own because they really believe. And, you know, the quarterback situation was just something they couldn't have projected, they couldn't have planned for, and that's where they use their money. And I would not be surprised if in February and March and April you get some extensions done to use up a lot of that cap space to kind of cushion the fact that they probably are not going to go out there, in my opinion, and be major players in free agency. Now watch, I'll be completely incorrect on that. Now, if I was Lynch, I'd probably want to get some of those extensions done anyway, because what I'd be worried about, just from a self-preservation standpoint, if you don't do well in 2019, if the 49ers are back again in the top 10 of the draft where they seem to live every single season right now, I'd be worried for my job security that someone's going to say, we're going to let this guy go in there the following year and have another crack at free agency, and have another crack at a top draft pick, and sign big extensions for some of these guys. No, you know, it's time to move on. It's, you know, we tried the experiment, it didn't work. So I think in that respect, you kind of make the move there. But overall, it's just a roster of a lot of guys. I don't know if there's a lot of cohesiveness there. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say, well, I watch a lot of the 49ers. I see a couple of games here and there of San Francisco. They're not a team that you really have an eye on because they're not very good. Even if the quarterback was healthy, I don't believe they'd be more than a 5 or 6 win team. So I don't think you really pay much attention to them. I think overall, I don't think Lynch has done a very good job. I don't know how you could give better than a D for what you've seen the last 2 years. They've gone backwards. At the best, they would have been sideways. You just look, I feel like it's stumbling through free agency, not necessarily targeting the right kind of players. And, you know, the draft stuff, you know, it is what it is. They selected that player, and that was not a very wise decision. And in my mind, that sinks kind of everything. Just that one move, I think, pretty much sinks it. So I think that wraps up just my little look at San Francisco here. And I did ask for questions on Twitter, so let's jump to those. And that's one of the reasons why I just didn't get into a little bit more on the free agency front, because I know some people ask that. So let me pull up the questions here. Just give me a second. I only got a couple. Where are those? All right, let's see here. Got a couple on this one. All right, let's start with this section here. Okay, so question number one, do you think or foresee any solid interior offensive lineman or wide receiver free agents this year? It's getting harder to tell who will hit the market with the tag so often. This is not really a good group of offensive linemen. Let's pull up the names. Maybe there's somebody I'm missing. He said interior, so let's do our 2019. We'll look at guards and centers. I don't think you're signing a center, but we'll throw those all in there. And let's get rid of the restricteds. We're just going to look at UFAs. So you've got Ramon Foster in from Pittsburgh. You know, he'll be 33 years old. He's a good player, you know, mid-tier kind of guy. He's affordable if you need another guard. It probably won't cost much, you know, probably a 3-year deal. I think he'll probably leave Pittsburgh because I'm not sure Pittsburgh will go there, but that would be somebody. You have Sweezy, who's up and down. I probably wouldn't take a chance on him. Roger Saffold is pretty good. He's 31. I kind of feel as if Saffold will probably be one of the higher priced players at the position. I think one of those teams like the Jets will probably swoop in on him. So I think that could be a little bit more difficult to go after. AJ Khan from Jacksonville, John Miller in Buffalo, Spain and Tennessee, James Carpenter from the Jets, probably not worth a look. Compton and the Vikings, Hopkins from the Bengals. Matt Paradis will be the top center from Denver. You know, he's hurt right now. DJ Fluker, you know, if you're just looking for a name to throw in there. You know, and then you start really dropping down into your Matt Slauson's, you know, and they're perfectly fine, you know, if you're just looking for a body to throw in there, but nothing that really stands out. So those are the kind of guys that you're looking at there. Wide receivers, no good wide receivers, no great wide receivers ever hit free agency. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So, you know, someone like a Devin Funchess is probably going to be the top name. Now, the question is, does the Sammy Watkins signing in Kansas City have a backlash on the whole market? We've seen that before, you know, that year with the Percy Harvin, Mike Wallace, whatever deals. You saw a pullback because everyone panicked. I don't know if that'll be the case. I think Funchess could be pretty expensive, even though he's had a down year. You know, he's got size and there's some skill and everything there. He hasn't really put it all together. But that would be someone. Larry Fitzgerald is probably going to retire or stick in Arizona. Moncrief, you should stay away from. Who are some of the other names out there? Chris Hogan, Chris Conley. You know, Conley might be a bigger body, you know, kind of one of those guys that, you know, someone would look at. And Adam Humphries, he's had a decent year. Cole Beasley, if you're looking for an older player with a name to just throw in the slot, you know, that would be someone. Jermaine Kearse, as someone that you can probably get dirt cheap that has some talent because he's had an atrocious year. John Brown. Brown is inconsistent. He's had his struggles at times. He's not going to be a good mesh with the young quarterback that's there, at least for the rest of the season. San Francisco wasn't interested in bringing him in this year. I don't think it makes sense this upcoming year. They already have guys that can stretch the field, but that would be a name. Quincy Enunwa on the Jets, you know, he's kind of in that tight end mold. You know, you've already got Kittles. So I don't know if Enunwa, who really has the body, I think, more of that, is much of a fit. Golden Tate, you know, if you want an older player, and maybe those are the kind of guys they target, but Tate's probably going to be more expensive. He did have a good game this past week. You know, that's really it. I mean, then you get down into, you know, guys that have a little bit of a name but haven't really produced. You know, Jamison Crowder, Jordan Matthews, Cordarrelle Patterson, Aldrick Robinson, Kelvin Benjamin will be a free agent. You know, that's the kind of guys who are going to be there. Kevin White, you know, do you want to just take a flyer on him, see if you can get anything out of him? You could probably do worse than just taking a flyer as long as you're not giving much to, you know, bring him in. You know, give him a $90,000 bonus or whatever the max bonus is and, you know, do that. Does the team get any cash back if a player is released because of conduct reasons? This is obviously in reference to Foster. And the answer is no. There are ways that they can collect money back. You know, he was suspended. When a player is suspended, they can have to forfeit some of their bonus money back. You know, you can get hit for conduct detrimental and possibly be fined for those kind of things, but I don't believe he was. So I think it's the, you know, the suspension game. You know, he'll pay back, I guess, 1/17 of his proration for the year for that, because I'm sure they're going to ask for that given how things went out. But in terms of the release, no, they paid him money to fulfill his contract. He basically did, and then they cut him. How did it go so wrong in 2018? Would have figured that the roster would have produced at least a few more wins. And I think I already talked about that. I think, why have things gone so wrong? Well, you go back to when Harbaugh left. It was just, it's chaos. I mean, it is you know, I mentioned the Raiders before, but it's the Browns. It's the Browns in that you've got one coach, then another coach, and then another coach. It's a constant change. Sometimes you do have to stick with it for a little bit. So you keep changing things, and when you keep doing that, you know, guys that are drafted or guys who are signed, you know, you look at someone like a Vance McDonald. You know, it's signed and immediately gone. And it's like, what's the point of doing that move? That's obviously a big one. Second one is I think they've just targeted the wrong players. I think that they, because they've decided to go lower in the spending thresholds, they've brought in too many guys who are older, too many guys that simply don't have the upside to make a difference on what's quite frankly a bad football team. I think they invested too much in Garoppolo. I think they put too much stock in him. I think one of the biggest dangers with signing a quarterback is for big money is that sometimes you convince yourself that that's all you needed. You know, when the Dolphins sign a Ryan Tannehill, and this might be a bad example because the Dolphins do spend on a lot of different spots, but sometimes you convince yourself, well, we've got the quarterback, so he's going to lead us to the promised land, or we paid for the quarterback, we can't pay for anyone else. That's the John Gruden philosophy. And it's really a crutch because the reality is when you look at the top teams in the NFL, and generally they have top quarterbacks, you know, if you're looking to compete with Tom Brady or you're looking to compete with Jared Goff, who, and I'm sure some people are going to say that he's not there yet. He hasn't arrived yet. But you're going to compete with Drew Brees. Aaron Rodgers is way down, but in most years you're going to compete with Aaron Rodgers. You're going to compete with a Ben Roethlisberger, the Tom Brady's, those kind of quarterbacks. Well, you are so far behind those players. I don't care what you paid Garoppolo. He is behind all those guys by a significant margin. You have to be willing to build up the rest of your roster to make up for really what's a deficiency at quarterback. Even if the salary tells you it's not a deficiency, you have to look at that and say, this is a deficiency. And we need to make up the gap between us and Russell Wilson by investing in a lot of other players. And I don't think they've done that. And I think they maybe have fallen into that trap of saying, we've got a quarterback. And I don't think that that they had it. And I think they built their roster as if they had a superstar. And I think that was a mistake. Corey, who's been a follower for quite some time, says, I would like to hear just an opinion on what you think they need to do. Well, I think one of the things I've been pretty consistent with during this has been saying that, you know, it's probably time for them to maybe target some players who are, again, they don't have to be the highest price guys, but guys who maybe do have that higher ceiling potential. You know, don't settle for the safe. You can do that when you've drafted well, and you can settle for those safe players because you've got these draft picks. So you're just augmenting them with guys who are coming in as free agents that are safe because you don't need to swing for the fences. You just need to bring in guys to fill in some voids while your rookies really do a lot of the heavy lifting. Your rookie contracts, not rookie players. So that's number one, is I think they have to get out of this, you know, third tier kind of player and start looking at those second and first tier guys. You know, look for those guys who are hitting free agency with first and second round grades and why that's the case. Number two, I think when it comes to the draft, I think one of the things you need to strongly consider doing, if you believe in Garoppolo, if it was me and there was a quarterback available and I can move down a little bit and get him, I would not be against taking a quarterback. And I know you're going to say that sounds crazy because that doesn't give you immediate help. You should have a backup plan for Garoppolo. And you're in a draft position this year to do it. What's the worst thing that happens? Garoppolo comes in and is great. Okay, sure, you paid the guy a big signing bonus. I can guarantee you, you will flip him just if you can showcase him a little bit in the preseason
And the fact that you paid a bunch of his contract already, I can guarantee within a year, certainly two, you can flip him for at least two first-round draft picks, maybe more. So I wouldn't be against that. But I don't know enough about the players in the draft to say there's a quarterback worth doing that for. And one of the things I always say when people ask me draft stuff, you know, I study the salary cap, I study contracts. I'm good with that, not good with the draft, not at all. So that's one of the things. The second thing when it comes to the draft, there are things that I do study with the draft, but it's more where value lies, not in a particular draft class. But given the deficiencies for the 49ers, if you do believe in Jimmy Garoppolo and you believe he is your quarterback, unless there is that absolute game-changing pass rusher in the NFL, and you know maybe that's this kid Bosa that people are talking about, I guess. I think I would do whatever I could to move down. And if it means moving down 1 to 5, 1 to 6, and then 6 to 11, 6 to 12, if you look at some of these picks, there's a lot of value to that first pick, but a lot of that is because it's a quarterback being drafted there. And again, I'll go with the pass rusher in that spot too. The second and third picks are basically overvalued, and your better value in terms of still getting an opportunity to get that high-end production is really between probably 11 and like 17 or so. I'd have to go back and look at my numbers, but it's somewhere around there. Your best overall value is going to be that late first, early second round. And there's value all the way to the third, but those move into the realm where you're not getting those star players. You know, you need to have first round picks still relatively high to have your better shot at getting stars. I would look to see if I could drop down right outside of the top 10. I think there's value in doing that, and you can add some other picks along the way. And I think you need to do that because you do need to get some players in here, you know, first, second, third round grades that are young and are going to be productive. And I think you're better off doing that than kind of putting all your eggs in one basket, because that's kind of what they've done the last couple of years and it hasn't worked out. You know, so that's one of the things I would do. I would get away as an organization, I think, from where I said you do have to swing for the fences sometimes. You also have to be more cautious. San Francisco kind of fell into this trap years ago when they were stocked with talent of taking a lot of guys who were hurt coming out of college, and they would fall in the draft because of injury, and they would come out and you know, they a lot of times it wouldn't pan out. You know, they'd begin the season on PUP, or they'd have the whole year on the PUP list. And I think sometimes you just want to stay away from some of those kind of question mark guys. And that extends to question marks like a Foster type. I think that kind of question you want to stay away from. And I'd stay away from major injuries when it came to that. And I think the fourth thing that I would look to do is I think you should look outside the organization for trades. See if you can find guys who teams are willing to dump for whatever reason for value picks. You know, if they're probably not going to get for a reasonable price someone like AJ Green, but you know what? Maybe that's a kind of team that's going to look to turn over some of the roster, and you can snag somebody like that. You know, and I know that that's a tail end player, and that, you know, he's still very productive and he's coming off injury. But I think when you bring in those kind of players, even if they're expensive, and even if they're more towards the end, because you're not guaranteeing them anything because you're bringing them in, it's no different than bringing in Sherman, because most of it was already paid for by, in this case, Cincinnati. So, you know, you're bringing in guys where you don't really have a long-term commitment unless you do something to kind of screw that up. So I would look around the league and I would see if there's a possibility in some spots where, you know, maybe some new coaches are coming in to where maybe there's some talent that could be found. and maybe it wouldn't be that expensive. You know, maybe it's worth it to do, and you know, maybe you can bring in you know, somebody that way. I think I would probably look to do that. And again, I'm not sure on specific players. I know I just threw Green out there. He's probably going to be too expensive to do something like that with. But, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, would the New York Jets be willing to move someone like Leonard Williams for a second round pick? You know, Williams might be a better fit here than he is with the Jets. The 49ers probably don't need him. You know, they have other guys who are capable, but you know, look for guys like that. I think that's probably a way that you can use, especially if you can trade back and you have some draft capital that you can spend on some you know, either real good quality veterans or guys who are towards the end of a rookie deal and maybe things haven't worked out for them. I think those are probably the things that I would look at doing. And I think if things don't go too well next year, I think then you got to move on. I think, and I know I said that you don't want to be the chaos organization always making changes, but it's such an out-of-the-box hire that I think if in 3 years they're still going nowhere, I think you probably have to look somewhere else. All right, last set of questions that came in here. What about Kelvin Benjamin to add some size to a wide receiver group, or will he command too much money now that he's a free agent? Yeah, you know, if you want to take a flyer on him next year, you can. He's not going to cost anything unless he really lights it up in Kansas City, my guess. He won't make it to week 17. Benjamin is big. Obviously, there's talent. I don't know how hard he tries. He seems to rub a lot of guys the wrong way. He's, you know, I talked about a higher draft grades. You know, he would have that. You know, you could take a chance on that. But I wouldn't spend much on him. You know, and you can't guarantee much. Do you think we could try and sign Sean Lee this offseason? I don't think Dallas is going to let him go. I know there's going to be a lot of talk that Dallas is going to cut him. He's been there for so long. And I think Dallas felt so bad when they had to do that with DeMarcus Ware years ago that I think they will do everything in their power to keep Sean Lee on a contract that makes sense for both sides. Would he be a kind of guy that could land in San Francisco given what they pay? Yeah, they might be aggressive for someone like him. You know, would another team think that he's worth a lot more? Maybe. But I could see him being in play if he was let go. But I don't think Dallas will. I think they'll figure something out for him. What does a Buckner extension look like? I think pretty expensive. Let's just pull up his numbers here. You're looking at someone, he was what, the 7th overall pick in the draft. So, I mean, that goes a long way. Anyway, he's already got 9 sacks this year. He's only going to be 25 next year. 18 sacks in 3 years. I think that's pretty expensive. I mean, you look at those numbers and already you're looking probably at a, you know, $15, $16 million type player. It's probably going to be more than that by the time it's all said and done. So that's a reason why I could see them, you know, trying to jump in now, excuse me, on him. But he's going to be pretty pricey. Let's see, next question. What are some scenarios for free agency for the team? Well, I think it's just a lot of those mid-tier kind of guys. I mean, you look at names that they need or positions that they need where you're looking in the secondary and you're looking at receiver. And I know they think they're going to get more out of Pettis and guys like that, you know, and they're still going to be hopeful for somebody, you know, more out of Goodwin. You know, but I would look at those guys, you know, your Humphreys and, you know, players like that. Those are probably the kind of guys that they're going to look at to bring in, you know, those veteran cornerbacks, you know, someone like a Claiborne, yeah, maybe that's the kind of guys that they're going to look at. You know, a Foster on the offensive line, yeah, that's a possibility. I think those are kind of what you're looking at. They have the money. I'm sure they're going to spend a lot of it, but I personally wouldn't get my hopes up too high for any of these big name guys. So if I was a, you know, big fan of the team and I was kind of studying up on free agency, I'd probably go to the free agency pages that we have and I would start looking at who are some of those guys that are probably going to be more mid-tier players. And I'd start to look at them and say, okay, those are kind of the guys that are probably going to get targeted by my team. Who are the pass rushers, corners, safeties, guards, and wide receivers we can go after? I guess this kind of goes hand in hand. So let's just pull up the free agents. I think we already went over wide receivers and we went over the offensive line. Let's look at the corners. Give me a second to pull them up. And so, you know, names, Kareem Jackson, Maurice Claiborne, Jason McCourty's much older. Roby from Denver. Scandrick's pretty bad. Darby from Philadelphia. Brent Grimes is really old. They're not going there. Darrell Roberts from the Jets. Buster Screen from the Jets. Rashawn Melvin on the Raiders. Denard from Cincinnati. Not much there. I mean, there's really not a lot of, you know, guys I think that are going to be big names. Maybe I'm missing somebody. But, you know, that those are the kind of guys that are going to be available there. If you look at safety, safety is a better group. Question is, who's going to be available? You know, I would think the Giants will probably franchise tag Landon Collins. Clinton Dix, you know, that's obviously been up and down. I don't know where his salary will land. If you want to take a chance on him, I think that's a talent you can take a chance on. He probably needs to get coached up or have a better feel for certain things. Matthew and from Houston, he's probably going to stick there. LaMarcus Joyner from the Rams will be a free agent. I don't think they will tag him again. Trey Boston, I think, is pretty good. You know, you've got Eric Reed, Earl Thomas, obviously. You know, if you wanted to start to make the Legion of Boom move from Seattle to San Francisco, you know, that's a possibility too. So there's good players at safety. I don't know if the Collins type is going to be available, but there's certainly players there. Pass rushers, that's the other one. And guys who will actually be available. See, Lawrence is going to get tagged, I think. Clark is going to get tagged. Not really a pass rusher, but, you know, Anthony Barr could be an interesting name for San Francisco to look at. He's probably going to be expensive, but it's not necessarily a premier position. So, you know, maybe they can talk themselves into it. I don't think Minnesota will keep him. Let's see. D Ford is going to be tagged. Clowney is probably going to be tagged. Preston Smith, he could be available. Clay Matthews will be available. Brandon Graham, you know, but now you're getting older. Brian Arakpo, you know, these are guys all kind of in their 30s. Trey Flowers, I don't know. You know, Trey Flowers could be available. I know there's going to be a lot of talk that he's going to get tagged. New England usually doesn't do that, so I think he could be available. You probably have to blow him away with an offer to pry him from New England, but I could see that. Dante Fowler will be available. You know, there's some upside there. He's not a bad situational player. I don't know if he's a good locker room guy. I think he wears on a lot of people. That seems to be that way. Bruce Irvin will be available. He's older, but if you're looking for a veteran, you know, you could, I guess, do worse. You know, more veterans like a Derek Morgan and Michael Johnson. Aaron Lynch might be somebody, you know, you could bring him back, I guess. I would think that ship has sailed, but he'll probably be available. Just seeing if there's anybody else. Barrett and Ray from the Broncos will be available. Ansah and the Lions will probably be available if you want to go there. There's pass rushers. So you probably will get a pass rusher. It's just a question as to what quality of pass rusher will you find. Finally, last question is, what are the chances that the 49ers land Earl Thomas? I don't think very high. I think Thomas has had his heart set on Dallas for some time. I think Dallas has kind of courted him too. I think the only reason that that deal probably would not happen is if Dallas is worried about getting nailed on some kind of collusion grievance by Seattle, because Thomas has gone out of his way to really show the Cowboys interest. And the Cowboys have obviously pretty publicly shown interest in Thomas too. So I kind of feel like he's probably going to land there, but you never know. Those things could change and be a little bit different. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an overview on the 49ers. Next week, I'm not sure which team will do. Probably the Raiders, since the Raiders currently are projected to have the second pick. So I think maybe we'll go in on the Raiders and whatever disaster. If you think San Francisco's bad, the Raiders are a lot worse. It's only been 1 year and it's really bad. And it's been a bad couple of years in Oakland. So that might be where I go next week. I may also instead do one of the other teams, depending on how the games go this weekend, but that's probably that. Haven't really looked much at the slate of games this week. For those of you that follow for the draft updates, I probably won't be doing them during this week's games. I have some other stuff that I'll be tending to, so I'm sure I'll be commenting on games via phone or something like that, but may not be online to update the draft status. Nick usually updates the website, though, for the draft order, I think right after the games usually. So it'll be there, and then I'll be back at night to do those kind of updates. But let's see. I didn't make my football pool picks yet, but let's see the games this week. Let's look at those real quick. And let's see. We've got Carolina-Cleveland. That could be kind of an interesting game. Carolina's kind of fallen off a cliff. Cleveland's got some fun stuff with their quarterback there. That could be a decent game. Cleveland looks like they're an underdog by 1.5, at least on the line that I had early in the week. I'd probably lean Cleveland on that. We'll see. Jets-Buffalo, that's a terrible game. Washington-Giants, that's pretty awful as well. Green Bay-Atlanta, man, that is a game that people thought was going to be great, and it's terrible. Green Bay is favored by 5.5. The only way Green Bay is going to cover that is if this was really a mutiny by the players. And now that the coach is gone, that you're going to see some kind of miraculous effort. I don't think that's the case. I'd probably lean Atlanta. Though again, I haven't finalized anything. New Orleans, Tampa. Tampa gets 8.5. Tampa always has a puncher's chance because of their offense. New Orleans, they're coming off the bad game against the Cowboys. You can slip wherever. They probably won't slip up, but I could see the cover there, especially a backdoor kind. Kansas City's favored by 6.5 over Baltimore. That's a pretty interesting game. Kansas City plays hardly any defense. Jackson might be a tricky matchup for them because he's going to run all over the place. They have a good running game in Baltimore too, a decent one that can take advantages of some deficiencies in Kansas City. And the Ravens have a really good defense. Obviously, this would be different, I think, if the game was in Baltimore. But I think it's an interesting game. At least I think the game is in Kansas City. Let me just check that. Where is the schedule? Let me just pull that up. I just realized that the way I had these open, I might have the teams wrong. So let's see. Where is that game? Where is that? Oh, no, it's up. No, I'm in the wrong week here. Sorry, guys, it's late. As I fumble through these, my computer's decided to slow down again. Mm. I'm doing this in my other spot, so I don't have the second computer. Usually I have two computers running when I record, and I don't have that on this one. No, it's at Kansas City. I was right. So that's a... it's an interesting game, but I would have rather seen that in Baltimore. New England, Miami, it doesn't really interest me too much. Indy, Houston could be kind of interesting. You know, Indianapolis had that real bad game against Jacksonville. I don't know if they were looking forward or not. Houston's got the big winning streak. Houston is the better team. 4.5 is a lot of points, though. I could see this being a shootout, ended up being a 3-point game at the end. Denver, San Francisco, Denver can't really afford a screw-up game, and their schedule's pretty easy, so I can understand how they could look forward. This could be a game they look past, but I'd probably take Denver. Cincinnati and the Chargers, that should be a wipeout unless the Chargers just have one of those down games. Detroit, Arizona, that's awful. Philadelphia, Dallas, big game for Dallas. Dallas can kind of wrap up things, I think, with a win here. Philadelphia can obviously get right back into it with a win. Pittsburgh, Oakland, that's a bad game, though. Pittsburgh does have a tendency to play games down. Don't be stunned if they play this one down. I wouldn't be shocked at that at all. Rams, Bears, that's an interesting one. Rams are the much better team. Bears are getting 3.5. I'd have to give this one, again, a little bit more thought, see what the weather and stuff is going to be like there. I'd probably go Rams in that one. Minnesota, Seattle, that's an interesting game as well. Vikings are barely holding on by a thread. I think that's a game the Seahawks will probably win and probably pull ahead towards the end and win going away. So, all right, I think that does it for me this week. So if you have any Raiders questions, feel free to send them over. And even if I don't do the Raiders next week, we'll be getting to them very shortly. So enjoy the games, everyone, and I'll talk to you soon.